Welcome to our November 2009 audio conference for pastors on how to launch a new church with our guest, Brian Bloy. My name is Bobby Gilstrap, and I'm the host for today's national teleconference. Let me introduce you to today's guest and let you find out a little bit more about who he is, and we're going to open up into our discussion of the five questions that must be answered. Pastor Brian Bloy is the founder and lead pastor of West Ridge Church in Atlanta, Georgia. In addition to seeing the Metro Atlanta area reach for Christ, he has a passion to see churches planted all over the world. In 1997, he and his wife Amy moved to the Northwest Atlanta area to plant West Ridge Church. In just 12 years, West Ridge has grown to over 4,200 in regular weekly attendance. Although that alone is an impressive work of God, more impressive is that West Ridge Church has helped plant 49 other churches in North America. 5 years ago, West Ridge Church launched the West Ridge School of Church Planting, where they mentor and coach church planters, helping them to be effective in church planting across the country and around the world. Pastor Brian has a Master of Divinity degree from Liberty Baptist Theological Seminary and a bachelor's degree from Liberty University. He and his wife, Amy, have two sons, Taylor and Zachary, and we are delighted to have him as our guest today. One of his passions is investing in leaders and church planters and spending time with his family. Pastor Brian, we want to thank you today for joining us, and welcome to our audio conference for pastors.
Well, hey, Bobby, it's good to talk to you, and I want to say hi to all the guys who are out there. I love church planters, and grew up in a church planter's home, and never thought I'd be a church planter myself, but here I am, and God just called me to, I think, spend the rest of my life in investing in guys who are planting churches, so I'm really honored to be spending this time with all you guys out there.
Well, I think just right out of the chute, Brian, that probably is an identification that most of us can relate to, because very few church planters that I know ever really initially felt like that's where God was wanting them. But once they jumped in the pool, so to speak, they've loved it and enjoyed it. It's a messy business sometimes, but it's something that is greatly rewarded by God. Hey, look, Brian, let me ask you to do something. Before we jump into our questions, let me ask you to kind of lay the groundwork for us. Take a couple of minutes. Take, you know, 3 or 4 minutes and lay the groundwork of why it is so important to understand these critical questions about launching a church. Why is it important to have enough time and people and momentum and money and community awareness? Help us have a groundwork to build on.
Well, I think, you know, you're wanting to plant a church that prevails, you know, and I mean, I tell our guys who, even 12 years into this, we're still in a marathon. This isn't a sprint. And, you know, I want to plant something that's going to be around long after I'm gone, and something that will continue to reach generations of people. And so I think what you do beforehand, before the church ever launches, is extremely important. And it's critical that you take the time and you identify the right people and you look at your money and the momentum and the community awareness part of all of that. So I think all of them are great questions because, again, you know, you're wanting to plant something that not only is healthy while you're pastoring it, you know, however long God gives you, but you want it to be prevailing. You want it to outlive you and to be something that is dynamic that God can use for years and years to come. So I think this is it's a crucial part, this pre-launch stage, and we spend a lot of time. That's one of the reasons we launched our school here at West Ridge, is we just thought that the pre-launch stage is just critical to the success and healthiness of a church.
Well, I love that word. I don't know that I've heard a planter use that term, prevailing. But I love that term, and I love what that says, how that speaks to the need. I know many places there have been lots of efforts, and lots of times we've dipped our toe in the pool, but we've not done it in a prevailing way. We've not laid the groundwork and done a successful job putting it together so that it succeeds, and we have a church mm-hmm. that sustains itself and is making an impact on the kingdom long term. So, and that's kind of the background for these five questions, is what do we need to do to establish the kind of groundwork to launch a church that's going to be a kingdom honoring church? Brian, let's jump right into these questions. There's not enough time to really unpack them all, I know, fully, but let's start. Let's try. Let's just start with question number one. How do you know if you have enough time to launch that new church?
Well, you know, I think planning is essential, and I wrote down on a piece of paper here that, you know, a timeline is really important. And I think one of the things that we did well, and I'll tell you some things we didn't do well as well along the way here, but You know, we had a timeline set out when I knew that God had really called us to plant and called us, you know, to specific location that we were going to go to. We just laid out a timeline. And so, you know, when we moved to Northwest Atlanta, I moved here from Lynchburg, Virginia, and we launched within 3 months of the time that we moved here. And I had a lot of people just say, that's crazy. But I spent a year before that on staff at another church. I was fortunate to have a pastor who believed in church planting because he was one himself, and he allowed me to have that year just to really plan. So, you know, I think it's just important to make sure that you take the time to lay it all out, to make sure that you're working through those values and the mission statement, and really in your heart know what God's calling you to do, to have a clear vision. I think that's a huge part of it, just to know that you've got a clear vision, to have an outreach strategy, you know, in place. And all of that goes down on a timeline. You know, by this time I want to have this done. And so, you know, I think, you know, I don't know if you – I think planters just know. You know what? I've had enough time here, and you know, I think in your heart, you know, when it's time to launch. And so, again, I you know – for us, I see a lot of guys who they want to jump right into it and not put a whole lot of planning. But again, like I said earlier, I mean, we're wanting this to be something prevailing. And so I think it's important to take enough time to let God speak to you clearly so that you know exactly what you're doing. Because I will tell you this, your vision, your values, everything's going to be challenged. And you want to make sure that it's just burnt down deep into your heart and so that you can communicate it. And that those who are starting it with you can speak the same language that you're speaking. And so, you know, start for the right reasons, put it all down on paper, and then just, you know, be willing to die for it.
Okay, Brian, let me play an advocate here for a few minutes.
Okay.
Because I know
sure.
on the line today with us in our conference, we've got everything from church planters, but we've also got guys that are coaching planters. We've got denominational people. We've got a wide spectrum of denominational people, from directors of missions and others. And in my role as a director of missions, I'm coaching guys, and I can't tell you the number of times over my years of doing this that we get a timeline. You know, this is where we're going. This is what we look at. This is what we think needs to be done. We set up some benchmarks or whatever, some mileposts. But then there's that excitement. There's that enthusiasm. There's that core group that's gathered, and it may be a fairly small core group, you know, initially, but they want to start having worship services. They want to start meeting weekly. They and you know what I'm talking about, that drive, that passion of wanting to do that. What are the things that help you to know, man, you're not ready? That you haven't had enough time to do what needs to be done. What else do you look for?
Yeah. You know, I think part of it is just, you know, are you ready? Is your team ready? You know, do they truly have an understanding of what's going on? Do you have, you know, everything in place? And I know, you know, I know that, you know, I've been around guys for the last 12 years that, you know, that we've helped train who want to jump and launch ahead of maybe even their timeline. And quite honestly, Bobby, there's been a couple guys that we've just said, hey, you know what, we think you're ready to do this. And so we've kind of let them, you know, we don't live and die by the timeline, but, you know, it does help kind of keep things moving ahead and make, you know, just making sure things are done. But we had a guy last year who had a solid core group. He had been a pastor for several years before, and we let him launch, just, you know, not let him, but we just, you know, he came to us and said, listen, we're ready. We're ready to go. And we let him go, and he was fine. Now, there's other guys who they want to blow past the timeline because they just want to get it off the ground. And the cement is so wet, and they get it off the ground, and it just struggles to keep going. And we've had a couple failures along the way. And, you know, I think it's important, you know, when again, I spoke earlier about, you know, this is a marathon. You want to make sure that this thing's going to outlast you. And so, you know, what you do in those early days is so crucial for the overall long-term healthiness of this church. I mean, one of the things that we did not do well, Bobby, honestly, is we didn't have the right systems in place when we started Westridge. And so, you know, administratively, for the first 3 or 4 years, we were a mess. I mean, if people really knew how messy we were, I'm not sure people would have stuck around. It wasn't anything dishonest or anything like that, but we just did not do our homework well enough to say, okay, if this thing takes off like it did, how are we going to handle this growth system-wise and just from all the administrative pieces. And so even today, we're still, you know, still fixing a lot of that kind of stuff. So, you know, again, I think it's important just to be patient and make sure you got everything ready to go, you know, some of the important pieces anyways.
So the timeline's critical. And the way you kind of know it's time to launch, or you can launch, is that you've accomplished many of those things, but you're not going to be legalistic with that timeline. If God's moving faster than what you anticipated in your timeline, then you want to be able to work with God, is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. Now, absolutely. I will say this, but I had a core group of people who had come from two church splits. They were very unhealthy. They wanted me to preach somewhere so they could hear me preach. They wanted me to launch even quicker than we did. And I just knew for the overall healthiness of this church, I could not give in to what they were asking me to do. And I kept telling them, listen, if you want to be part of Westridge Church, here's what we're doing. If not, man, we love you guys. Go do something else. But, you know, I heard a friend of mine, Sean Lovejoy, said one time, he said, you got to be mean about your vision and really hold your ground, you know. And so, you know, I think you surround yourself with some godly wisdom. Don't listen to everybody. Put two or three people in your life that really love you and know you and have your best interest in the church in mind, and listen to those guys.
Absolutely.
I think that's important.
And Brian, let me add this addendum to that, because I think it is very, very true. The phrase that Sean gave you, be mean about your vision, you're not saying that somebody else's thought or idea may be right or wrong. The bottom line is God's given you the vision for the kind of church that you need to be planting in that place, and you do need to stick to that. You need to be faithful to what God's given you and not be pulled off task by a lot of other thoughts. Somebody else may have a great vision, but if that's not what God's given you, it's not a matter of right or wrong. But you're right. It's better for them to hit the road and do something else. And that's part of the messiness in our pre-conversation a while ago. You know, I mentioned that church planting is messy sometimes.
And
that's part of it. You've got to step to the plate and say, look, this isn't going to work. And you're a great person. We love you. Want to part friends, but we need to part. At that point.
Exactly.
Well, talking about people, let's transition right on into the second question. How do you know if you have enough people to launch your new church?
Well, I guess the question you have to ask yourself is, what is success? You know, and you know, what kind of church do you feel like God is asking you to launch? I mean, we launched in a metro part of Atlanta. It's a very growing population. I think when we came here, it's the seventh fastest growing area in the country. So, you know, for us, we felt that God was gonna give us a lot of folks, and so we knew that if we were gonna do this the right way, we had to have, you know, a solid core group of people who could cover all the bases from the beginning. I think it's kind of hard, you know. I don't want to jump into momentum right here because that's later, but you know, it's kind of hard to get momentum when you have, you know, 10 or less people. I think we had 46 people. I don't know, you know, if that's a great number or not. We're planning a church in South Carolina right now in Charleston, which is a growing area, and their goal is to have 100 people. And but I think more than anything, you've got to look at your launch team, and you've got to say what is important for us, you know, when it comes to a church. You know, we got to have, you know, I think most everybody would agree, you know, we've got to have something solid in the worship area. So do we have that base covered? Do we have, you know, we want to make sure that we're solid in our children and preschool area. Do we have those bases covered? We want to make sure that when people come, they feel greeted and feel the warmth. And so we got to have some good, solid people in the host team. So, you know, I think you got to look at your folks and go, you know, what do I want to try to accomplish? And do I've got the people to make that happen? I'll just tell you, you know, the very first church plant that I was part of with my dad down in South Florida, it was just me, my brother, and my mom and my dad. And an aunt and uncle, and it was tough. The church didn't last. The church only lasted about a year, and you know, part of it was back in the early '80s when my dad started his church. It didn't have all this information out there and coaching and help, but it was brutal. And looking back at when we started in 1997, we couldn't have launched this without the folks that we had. And so I think it's important that you got to have at least enough people to create a little bit of momentum, to create a little bit of a buzz, who can have all of your bases covered, you know. And you don't have to do everything, and don't try to do everything right off the bat. I mean, we strategically waited until we started small groups and until we started this and that. Just get the bases covered, make sure they're covered well, and, you know, and make sure you got the right people in the right place.
Okay, let me jump on that again.
Sure.
What I hear you saying is there's no set number as to the number of people that need to be in the core group or the launch team or whatever you're calling it, but you need to have some essential tasks that are covered by people. God has to have provided or needs to have provided some essential areas. What are some of those? You mentioned worship, but what do you think are some of those critical areas that are, at least, and understanding, I think we're talking about, I guess what I would call more of an attractional type church model, you know, organic churches or house churches. I mean, that's a whole other kind of ball game as far as launching that kind of a work. But in this kind of a model, what are the critical things if people are going to come to a school or come to a community center or come to an area where a church is starting? What are the critical things that you need to have people in place for before you launch?
Yeah. Well, again, I think you want to make sure if you are going to be an attractional model, and I understand, you know, the whole missional attractional thing. I mean, hopefully we're a little bit of both, or, you know, but, you know, I just think there's some essential things. You know, worship's part of it, as you mentioned. If most of the guys who are planning are younger guys, and so you're gonna attract people who are probably around your age, and they're gonna have younger kids, and I what I've learned over the years is that people will put up with this, you know, with some mediocre worship and mediocre teaching as long as their kids are having a great time and they're in a safe environment and they're learning. And so, you know, we spent a lot of time early on making sure that our children's ministry was really solid. We had some solid people in there and in preschool and children. And safety is a huge part of that. So you want to make sure that you've got, you know, at least that covered. And then, you know, again, I think when people come to a church, especially if you're trying to reach unchurched people, they want to feel welcome. So I think that was an important part for us early on. But I will say this, just to kind of throw something in there, Bobby, because I think this is huge, and it's a lesson that I learned the hard way. You don't just want to give any warm body person a role just because you're desperate and they're willing. I mean, you want to make sure that, you know, even from the get-go, that you've got the right people in place. Because I tell you what, one of the things that's really hard is to remove a person later on. You know, and then also tell people, be very careful what you promise. You know, there's a lot of people that jump on church plants early on looking for a job. And so even with our core group early on, I mean, there are a couple situations where I think I did well of just saying, hey, this is not going to become a full-time job. We just need you to do this. And there was a couple that I just said, hey, you know, man, you are the right person, and I was desperate. And when I had to remove that guy about 4 months into it, it was painful because he just wasn't the right person, and I was desperate. And so hopefully that helps a little bit, because I watch church planters make a lot of desperate, you know, mistakes early on, and you want to have the right people in the right places.
Well, again, that goes back to the messiness sometimes. And what I tell our guys all the time is your first 20 are going to determine your next 100. And you've got to be very selective about those first 20. Because their network is what's going to help you reach the next bunch that are going to come
into
your part.
Then I'll tell you this, Bobby, as well. One of the things that I've learned, I see this with our church planters, that is the guys, the folks you start with, usually pioneers, about 2 years in, they're not really sometimes the people you're going to build further with. Pioneering people, sometimes they'll leave just to go to another church plant because they love to pioneer. And it wasn't until about 2 years God brought in another wave of people that weren't pioneers. And that's when we really started growing, because they were people you could build on that could take us to the next level. So it's interesting how God brings people in different waves.
Yeah, that's a great observation. Okay, let's look at question number 3. How do you know if you have enough money to launch that new church?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, I think it goes back to what's your vision. You know, if your vision is to start large and you feel like you're going to reach a lot of folks, then obviously you need more money. If you're in a community that what's success? Is 300 to 500 success? You know, is 1,000 to 5,000, whatever. I think, you know, you have to look at that and then just lay out and say, you know, what are our priorities? You know, I talked earlier about worship and children and that kind of stuff. So, you know, if you're going to be a church that is, like, for instance, in an area like Atlanta, there's huge churches with great music all over the place. So we knew when we launched that we had to do this well. And so we invested a lot of money into sound. We invested a lot of money into preschool and children because the average age of our community was 29.7 years old. So we knew that we were going to get a lot of families with young children, and so we put a lot of money into that. And we knew that it was going to take X amount of dollars to rent, you know, to rent. So one of the things that we did is we created a budget. We created a 6-month budget. We created a launch budget, and then we created a 6-month budget, it wasn't about 2 years into that we actually did a whole year budget, because things were so fluid and they were changing, and we didn't want to be stuck on something for a whole year. But I'll tell you, one of the marks of a successful church planner, and I hate, because it doesn't sound real spiritual, I hate to say it, is the ability to raise funds. And you've got to have some ability or capability or just some heart to go out there and make the ask, you know. So I don't know if I answered the question. Our goal was $185,000 in the first 2 years. We achieved that. I see guys do more. I see guys do less. So.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is contextual. Depends on where you are. Depends on the kind of launch. Depends on the size, the vision. Those things vary as to the amount of money that's required. But I think what you said is critical in today's world. A church planter does have to be effective in working with his network and bringing financial support around as well. Now, let me ask you real quick about the budget. Let's move on to momentum then. But when you look at that budget, you said you had a launch budget, then you had a six-month budget, and it was several years before you set up kind of an annual budget. But a budget, that was just kind of your projection. You didn't really follow that now, did you?
Well, you know, we tried to, actually. I mean, we really tried to, because what happens if you don't stick with, you know, at least have some kind of, you know, guidelines, some kind of margin in there. I mean, you just kind of give in to the tyranny of the urgent at some times. And so, you know, I think your budget kind of has to go along with your vision and with what you really see God doing. And, you know, one of the things I think a budget helps you do is just to say no to people sometimes. And, you know, it kind of goes back to the people issue. You got people with just who are well-intended, who want you to do this or that. And sometimes you can look and say, you know what, we just can't do that. We just didn't set this place up to be able to do that. So I'm not saying that we were legalistic or strict with our budget. I mean, church planners have a tendency to fly by the seat of their pants a lot of times. And quite honestly, guys who are, you know, church planners are normally A-type personalities who, you know, they want it today and they want it, you know, they want it now. And so they'll just do whatever it takes. But I think you've got to put some kind of thing there to at least make sure that the church planner doesn't completely destroy the thing in the first while by making some unwise purchases. And I'll tell you, one of the things that I've seen guys do, which I think is a huge mistake, and I don't know how you feel about this, Bobby, I've watched a lot of guys put a lot of money on their personal credit card to get a church off the ground, and I think that's a huge mistake. And we're dealing with a guy right now who has over $40,000 on his credit card because he wasn't able to raise enough money. And you know, I think at moments like that, you got to step back and say, "Am I really a church planner? You know, or do I have I taken enough time and, you know, lay the right foundation?" So,
well, I hope you pick up my transition into that was again being a devil's advocate, but you came in right where I was wanting you to come in, and that is that budget is built on your vision. The budget is built on your vision. And, yes, you've got to stick with that budget. Now, again, unlike you, I don't think it has to be legalistic. But if you don't have some parameters to say, look, especially a new church can't be everything to everybody. I know one of my church plants, we got more calls early on of people wanting to have transportation. It was a lower income area, and we almost every other contact we had was somebody wanting a ride. But initially, that was not something that we could provide. And knowing what your budget is, knowing what your vision is, it helps you to say yes and no to some things along the way, make some priority decisions, because you can't be everything to everybody as much as you'd like to be sometimes without any doubt. So I think that's critical.
We're finding that 12 years in, Bobby, honestly. I mean, it's still the same. We're still having to cut things that we shouldn't be doing and, you know, continuing to get back to what is it that this church is really about, and let's do that, you know. And so, you have to keep reminding yourself of that and keep tweaking that and keep working it.
Absolutely. Well, let's look at question number four before we run out of time. We're down to about another 10 minutes, 8 or 10 minutes before we want to open the phone lines up and let our conferees chime in. So let's look at question number four. How do you know if you have enough momentum to launch that new church?
Well, I think you look at your team. You know, if you've got some folks that God's allowed you to start with, I think, you know, it's a good indicator. I mean, are they ready? You've got, the people that God's put in your core group, are they ready to go? I mean, I think the reason we started 3 months after we moved here is because we had people who just, I couldn't wait. They couldn't wait. It was just, I had a staff member who was trying to hold us off from starting. But, you know, it's kind of like giving birth. Honestly, you just know. You know when it's time. And I think God just, he speaks to the heart of a planter and to those that he is, you know, entrusted to help give him wisdom just to say, you know what, it's just time. But you don't want to miss that window, too. And one of the things that I've seen a lot of guys do is they struggle with failure to launch syndrome. And we've had a couple guys, one in particular a couple years ago, who just never launched. And he had a great plan. He loved to talk about it. He loved to blog and Twitter about it. He could get people excited about it, but he could not pull the trigger. And so today, there's no church down there. And this was going to be an inner city church in downtown Atlanta. Never could pull the trigger. And I think, you know, you have that window of opportunity where that momentum is there. You just feel it. And I can't, you know, really describe it any better. You just feel it. You know it. You know God is saying it's the right time. And sometimes, and I know you know this, Bobby, I mean, sometimes you can look and go, we may never have enough money. We may never have enough people. We may never have all of our T's crossed, but we've done everything that we know to do, and it's just time to get this thing off the ground. And we'll, you know, let God take care of some of the messiness, as you mentioned earlier. But you don't want to miss that window.
Let me ask you a question. When you're looking at momentum, and I'm picking up from what you just said, this is possible, but I want to hear from you. Is it possible to miss that window to effectively launch? In other words, to have the momentum and then lose it?
Yeah, and I think part of it, yeah, I do. And I think part of it is just the planter feels that he's got to have everything done in line. Everything's got to be perfect. And it's just never going to be perfect. You know, it's. I remember when you know we found out we were having our first child. I looked at my wife and I'm like, how are we going to afford this? It doesn't matter. You know, I mean, it's going to happen. And so, when we launch Westridge, there are so many things that we could have done. You know, if we'd have had another couple months, but I don't think it would have made it any better. It would have just prolonged things, and we probably would have lost our core, and we would have exasperated people. And so, you know, at the front end of this conversation that we're having, I think you've got to take enough time to make sure everything is laid out, systems, values. You've got to do everything you can to you know, to keep your timeline going. But you know what? When it's time to launch, you got to just do it. You just got to launch and trust God with that and let him, you know, fix some of the messiness along the way. But don't do it too soon. But I think a church planter knows, and I think those who are around him affirm that and can give him that wisdom.
Very good. Let's look at our final question in these last few minutes. How do you know if you have enough community awareness to launch that new church?
You know, you do everything you can do, and you trust God with the rest. I think when we first moved here 12 years ago, we showed up at everything that gave us an opportunity to pass out a flyer. Any time that we had an opportunity to be in front of people to talk about Westridge, we just did it. One of the things that we said was we were going to create a buzz. And people may not even have totally understood what we were doing, what we were all about, but we were going to get people in the community around us just talking about something that was coming. We called it a wave. And so we said we're going to start a wave. And so when that wave kind of, you know, you talk about building momentum, you know, when we launched, so many folks just came that first Sunday because we had created such a buzz about what was coming. But I'll tell you, you know, you've got to beat the pavement. You know, I worked for 6 years for Jerry Falwell. He planted his church back in the 50s. I remember asking him, you know, I said, tell me how you did this. He said, I knocked on 100 doors a day. And so when we came here, I mean, this was back in 97 before they had a lot of books out and all this stuff. I mean, my wife and I just got out of our car, and we just knocked on doors and met people. And I think relationships are the best marketing tool. We've never done a billboard. We've never done a direct mail piece. I'm not against any of that stuff. But I'm telling you, I think knocking on a door, shaking someone's hand, meeting someone in a restaurant, just talking to people, there's a far greater return than, you know, investing $20,000 in a mail piece. And I said early on, I mean, we have folks who are still here from our early launch because we knocked on their door and met them and created that buzz that way and got their neighbors and got them to talk to their neighbors. So
unpack that a little bit more. We've got a couple of minutes. Let's talk about some other things you did. What are some of the practical things you did to create that buzz, what you called a wave? You mentioned meeting people, getting out, going through the neighborhoods. But what are some other things you did to build that, to create that awareness in the community?
Well, you know, I had because I came from the youth ministry world, I had a lot of youth pastor friends who had youth groups, and so I was calling them on the phone and I said, "Hey, listen, would you bring your youth group here for a weekend in August in '97?" And I said, "I'll find places for them to sleep. I'll feed them pizza, you know, whatever. But would you give me an entire Saturday where they just went into neighborhoods and just passed out, knocked on doors and passed out flyers?" And they did that. And so we brought in, I mean, the day before we launched, I think we passed out, we knocked on over 2,000 doors. A lot of our church planters now, they'll drive through a neighborhood and put it on the mailbox, you know. But there's something about just meeting people and asking them questions. We surveyed our area with the 5 Rick Warren questions, you know. Took some time and just asked people what they were looking for and why they didn't go to church. And if a church were to come here, what would cause you to go to church, you know? And I would just give people in our core group, I'd load them up with brochures, and I'd say, pass these out to everybody you can find. Every time they did a festival, we're in our area, they're real big arts and festival kind of area. And so we would just show up, and we would have bottles of water, hand out balloons. You know, balloons are cheap. Kids love balloons. We put the Westridge logo on these balloons. It just gave us opportunity to talk to families. And so everywhere there was a gathering, we would show up there. And we did a lot of acts of kindness before the church began. Just loved on the community. Our community had never seen that before. And so in their mind, it was like, this church is out to get something. And we just had no strings attached. We just created this. A lot of what we did with the wave and the buzz was just, we just loved on people and constantly did acts of kindness in the community.
Excellent. Now, in your working and coaching, especially through your school you've set up now working with church planters, what variety do you see in creating community awareness among guys in other settings?
Well, you know, you got guys who are phenomenal marketers. I think it's amazing. I think this church planting wave that has started over the last 10 years, you've got guys who really know how to create a buzz. And so they've done some really creative things like egg drops, you know, on Easter and things around Christmas that really, you know, do some – I've heard some really just off-the-wall, just creative things that I go, my goodness, that's creative. And then you got guys who, you know, they really struggle to just get out there. But, again, I think one of the things I continue to tell guys is you've got to put yourself in a place where you can meet people and talk to people. And, again, I'm not against this, but I see so many church planters that just want to send out mailers and invest all of their time into, letting someone else put something in through the mail or whatever that looks like in someone's hand. And I still think that there's just great value in just being out there with people and getting to know people and shaking their hand and talking to them and finding out what they're looking for and, you know, having those conversations about God early on. And, does that make any sense?
Oh, it makes total sense to me. And what I would say, I think, to come along with that is I don't have any opposition to you know, getting the word out there and getting your logo out there and creating a buzz through some media. I don't have a problem with that either. But ministry is about people. It's about relationships, and we want to introduce them to the ultimate relationship, which is a relationship with Jesus Christ. And the reality is, in starting a new church, if all those people come because they saw a billboard and there's not some relational things going on there with many of those, you're not going to know what you're going to get, to be honest,
if that's the only thing
that's driving it.
Yeah, we surveyed a couple years ago. We surveyed all of our membership classes to find out why they had come to Westridge, and over 80% of the people who are here that were coming here was because of a personal one-on-one relational invite, and which is the reason we still do a membership class. We want people to have information, but we just, you know, the things that we've done, which have been very few. Now the web, I'll tell you one thing that I'm learning is that people will go to a website real quick. And so I think that's an important piece of launching a church, is that a lot of folks, especially unchurched folks, they're going to go to your website first and check you out. And so I think there's some value in making sure that that's done with excellence, and we're continuing to look at that. But you know, you can't put a price tag on that personal invite and that one-on-one handshake and, you know, that person meeting and knowing your heart.
Absolutely. And I think when it comes to community awareness, there are few communities, probably at least in the United States, that having a website is not pretty essential to putting a good foot forward in raising awareness, because people will do that. They like the anonymity of doing that, I think, without any question. Yeah, and opens it up. Well, look, Brian, let's put a pause on our conversation, and let me do this at this time. I'd like to open up the phone lines for our conference participants to ask questions. Participants, let me ask you to do this. You'll need to self-mute your telephone. You can do it on the conference bridge by pressing 4-star, and then unmute the phone if you'd like to ask a question. You'll need to press 4-star again to unmute it, obviously. And if you can mute it on your own phone, you may want to do that, choose to do that instead. And as well. So let me unmute your phone, and we'll ask you if you have a question for Brian or a comment. If you'll give us your name and where you serve before asking your question or making your comment. If there's much of a lull, I'll jump back in with Brian, and we'll continue our conversation some more. But make sure to mute your phone. Remember, it's 4-star, or mute it on your own telephone there. All right, let's open up the phone lines. Someone have a question for Brian at this point.
Hey, Bobby.
Yeah, speak right up.
This is Chris Baker. I serve as an associational missionary in South Alabama.
Right. Step in there real close for us, Chris, so we can hear you. Chris Baker, all right. Ask your question.
Yes, you talked about getting systems ready. What are some of those systems that are vital to launching?
Well, and some of this is obviously goes back to the money issue, Chris, and appreciate the question. We really did not have a great system in place for tracking people and knowing where they were coming from and just the follow-up process of you know, you got a new guest coming in. And all of a sudden, you know, how do you have a follow-up process in place? You know, what's the steps that take place after that person comes to visit you for that first time? And so, and then also just, I mean, real simple. I mean, just how to, you know, the systems for giving and keeping track of your finances and stuff like that. And so, we use some of the older products early on. And, right now we just invested in a new software called Connection Power, which has really helped us in a huge way. And they actually will sell you that product based upon the size of your church, and they've got an entry package for church plants as well. So we just didn't have things grew so quickly we couldn't keep track of what was going on and where people were going, where they were coming from, and were they coming back, you know, and you know what people's needs were. So
very good. Thank you, Brian. Chris, do you have a follow up there?
No, that's it. That's what I want to know. Thank you.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Chris. All right. Someone else, unmute your phone. If you have a question for Brian, give us your name and where you're serving. All right. Somebody else jump in there. You've answered all the questions, Brian. that's what's happening.
I did a really good job or a poor job. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I don't know. So, sometimes the guys are a little hesitant to jump in, so they don't like the idea. That's okay. I tell you what, let me follow up real quick with the systems question Chris had, then we'll go back to the phones here again in a second and see if anybody has another question. I tell you what, let me double-check something here, though.
Conference muted.
Yeah, okay. I wanted to make sure that I had muted everybody. That I had that happen one time before. I had all the lines muted. I kept asking for a comment, and I never got one. And that would explain why, because nobody could. Let me ask you this. We were talking about the systems, and you talked about this tracking software. What do you think are the most important things for a new church to be tracking? Obviously, they want attendance, but beyond that, what are the most important things?
Well, I think you need to have some accountability in the whole giving process, and that the senior pastor is not the one handling all that stuff, because that's a bad place to put a guy into, And I think even, you know, if you have somebody early on that you can trust that and they've got at least a good entry system to keep track of giving and all of that stuff, and that the senior pastor can kind of distance himself away from that as quickly as possible, I think that's a good thing. But also, I think tracking, you know, first-time guests and finding out, you know, being able to follow up on them, to finding out, you know, what their needs are, if they've got children, making sure that somebody from the children's area is hopefully maybe giving them a call and just welcoming them to the church. And, you know, you find out a lot of information when you get into calls like that, and especially if it's not, I did a lot of the calls early on, but I found out that a lot of times people will be more honest with some of the other callers, you know, and so, and I think it's, you know, you want to find out what kind of experience people had, and even to this day, Bobby, we send out a card that says, tell us what you like most, or tell us what you like least, you know, what did you notice first, that kind of stuff, and they come back anonymous, but now with our guests, we've set it up now with this new software where we have at least, I think, 4 or 5 touches after they come through. And we've really seen some success with that.
Yeah, that's awesome. We used to do what I call the 7 and 7. We wanted 7 touches in 7 weeks minimum. Many of those were up front. You know, in that first week or two, you had more. But we wanted to make sure we didn't drop it and move on until we had at least a 7. So, all right, let's open the lines up. I've got another question I want to follow up if nobody else has a question, or I may stick it in anyway on the fundraising aspect of church planters and
sure.
What they do as well. But let's call at this point or other questions. Does someone else on the line want to ask a question? Pastor
Brian, John Hager from Utah, Idaho.
Oh, my man, John. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, man. Doing great, great. Wanted you to speak a little bit about the value of and the process of assessment of the church planter on the front end, and what pieces do you think should be a part of that assessment process?
That's a great question. John, I'm going to tell you, we miss you and your wife. I want you to know that, buddy.
Thank you,
John. John and his wife used to be part of Westridge for several years and was involved in our local association here, so I hope you're doing well. The longer I do this, I'm the stronger of a believer I am in strong assessing tools, and I just think that there needs to be some things up front that assess. I think the marriage of a planter, if he is married, I think the psychological tools are important just to find out what kind of personality you're dealing with. You know, I think a lot of the questions about, you know, past experiences in history and what has the guy done in the past to show that he can actually launch a church and that he's got a heart for evangelism and that he can communicate effectively. I think all of those things are important, and I think honestly I think one of the things that we've done a poor job of over the years is not assessing enough or not being honest enough in assessment and not being willing to say to a guy straight up, you are not a planner. I don't know if it's because, you know, for years we've been so desperate and we just want people out there to say we're planting X amount of churches, but I think in the long run, if you don't do enough assessment and if you aren't honest enough with the assessment tool and willing to say to a guy, listen, we're not going to support you because you're just not a planter, but here's some other options. I think in the long run, not only do you end up hurting that guy, but you hurt a lot of people along the way. And because you just see all these churches that fail. And you know, there's a lot of guys out there, unfortunately, I think, that are planting that really should not be planting. But I think a lot of that could be found out, you know, up front if the right assessment tools were put in place.
Very good. Thanks for that question. Assessment is
a
critical aspect, I think. Yeah.
Take care, John.
Okay, you too.
Thank you, John. All right, someone else have a question. Give us your name and where you serve. Somebody else. Right, Brian, let me follow up with my question that I was wanting to ask related to planters and fundraising for a new church plant. What have you found be most effective, or maybe there's not a most effective? Maybe a lot of it depends on the guy and the location, but you find the raising of money, guys that are doing that, for it to be most effective with church sponsors, you know, churches that are helping to support a new work and a fella as he's planting? Or is it more individuals? What have you found? Is there a mix, or is there an easy answer to that?
I don't know if there's an easy answer, but I do think, I think it's probably a mix.
Muted.
I think it's a mix, Bobby, and I think for us, we had a lot of folks that supported us individually, but we had four or five churches that supported us as well. We had one church, matter of fact, First Baptist Woodstock here in our own area, that was probably our greatest supporter financially. I really learned to think kingdom-minded from Johnny Hunt and the rest of the crew there. But, you know, we sent out – I had a person help me early on to write some really good letters that we sent out. I think we had our mailing list between four of us guys who were involved in Planting Westridge was about over close to 500, and we sent it out with an envelope that could be returned to us. And then I sent up a follow-up letter after that to all of those folks. And, you know, it's interesting, I tell this to our planners, the people that I really thought would support us and that had the means to support us in a big way really didn't. It was people that I never expected. It was like that last-minute person. I'm going, I don't know if I should send that to this person or not. And I did last minute, and they ended up being one of our biggest supporters. So I think individuals are a big part of that. If you can find some churches that really want to do that. Plus, I'll tell you, one of the things that's available now that wasn't when I was planning was there's a lot of organizations out there that are willing to jump in and support church planters. You don't have to leave your denomination. You don't have to, sign your life away. There's just a lot of really good organizations out there that are coming along planters now and helping guys out.
And so really kind of a mix then is what you're saying.
Absolutely.
God needs to have some
of
both. Yeah. Well, yeah. And I know some guys like Nelson Searcy and some other guys that are well-known in church planting circles really push the church support because there's more stability there than individual, a lot of times as far as getting laid off or whatever. But then there are others that lean heavy on the individual. I think there needs to be a balance. I'm not sure what the balance is exactly. I think that varies from person to person. We just did, just for our listeners, we just did a training on what we call 552, how every church can start a church, that's on my resource blog that they can link to, that talks about how you can bring in large groups of individuals along with a church to help plant a new church. And that's a way of helping do that as well. So there's lots of ways, I think, that are available for people to be able to do that. All right, let's open the lines up one more time, see if we have any questions here before we close. You have a question from Pastor Brian. How about give us your name and location?
Brian's Mike McCarthy in Colorado.
Speak up there, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Just barely, though, if you'll speak up for us.
Yeah, if you could address just some of the concerns that we have on the dependency on external funding, particularly as regarding the length of timing for funding and size expectations. Out here in resort communities, small mountain communities, this is not the South. And the pool there is a lot different culturally and size-wise outside the urban metropolitan areas. And so that's one of the greatest difficulties we have is expectations coming out that you're going to have a church of 100 people, within 3 to 5 years, which is very rare.
Yeah. So do you want me to address some external concerns? Is that what you're asking me?
Right. Well, one of the things we face here is that when the funding runs out, when the external funding runs out, guys leave.
Yeah. Yeah. And
because
I saw that
expectations
John,
that they bring coming in.
Yeah. And I saw that with John, John Hager, who just asked the last question, he's out in Salt Lake, in the Salt Lake area. And I know we planted a church out in Utah, years ago and we saw the
conference
same thing with the guys out there. So, I think if you've got a good solid church, a couple really good solid churches that are willing to stay the distance with you, and I think for some of these communities that you go into, like for instance for us, looking downtown with some of our urban plants, which are challenging as well. We know that we may have to be in that situation for a lot longer than 2 years, and that it may never be self-funding. And so, I think with some of these plants out here, you've got, for us, we asked our folks to support us for 2 years. We asked our churches that came alongside of us to support us for 2 years. But I think there are scenarios, Mike, and maybe you're in that situation where you may have to find some churches that are willing to say, or you're able to say, this may never be a completely self-funding church. It may always be a mission. And I saw something the other day where Bob Roberts said that the United States is now the second or third largest mission field in the world. And we may have to look at some of our church plants, especially in some of the areas where you're not able to raise a lot of funds like that, and to say, you know, hey, this may always need to be a mission of this church. We may have to look at this way. And like I said a little while ago, Mike, I think now there's also some organizations out there that are willing to look at church plants that way as well. And, you know, I don't know if I helped you with that question, but it's I think we're going to have to get more creative with some of these churches if we're going to keep some of these guys in the game a lot longer and the church is going to become a prevailing church.
Very good. All right. Any other questions? Someone else want to ask Pastor Brian a question? Give us your name and where you serve. All right, Pastor Brian, I tell you what, let's do this.
Conference muted.
As we wrap it up, let me make this commitment to our conferees. I will send a follow-up email with the links that we've mentioned to the Connection Power, to the 552 info, some of this other stuff that we've mentioned, so they'll have that. And Pastor Brian, do you mind if we also send to them in the follow-up email the link to your Twitter if they want to follow you on Twitter?
Oh, that'd be great. It's just Brian Bloy. That's my Twitter handle.
Okay.
And my blog is brianbloy.com, and I spend some time on there from time to time addressing church plants. And Bobby, let me just say this, if I could, if you don't mind, if there are any guys out there that are interested in spending 5 or 6 months with us here in the Atlanta area, going through our church planting school, we'd love to be part of helping to train guys all over the country. And, of course, as I mentioned to you before we started the call, I've got a real heart for South Michigan because I'm from the Detroit area, so we'd love to help you guys plant churches in southeastern Michigan.
That would be awesome. Yeah, we appreciate that, and if guys can take you up on that coming to the school, they can send information directly to you to get information on the school, and I think that would be really awesome if we can do that. Well, I'll tell you what, before closing, let me remind you that we do have four other interviews with the basic same five questions that we've asked Pastor Brian today. They are all on my resource blog at bobbygilstrap.com under Church Starting, and we hope that those will be helpful to you as well if you have an interest in this topic. We want to thank Pastor Brian for his time and sharing his expertise. I know that we haven't answered all of our questions about how to launch a new church, but my prayer is that today's conference has helped us in thinking through and moving in the right direction of how to start a new church, giving us some tools to put us on the right track. For our audio conference ministry, I'm Bobby Gilstrap. We want to thank you for joining us today.